You're tuned in to 90.3 KNBA, and I'm Frank Scheif. Look, I've got a special guest in the studio today. Irene Bedard is here to tell us about what's happening at the fair, as well as, well, what's happening with Irene Bedard. I think we can't really avoid that question.
Well, how are you?
I'm pretty good. How have you been?
Oh, so blessed to be back home in Alaska. That's how I've been.
It's always a pleasure to see you come back and do what you do. And I think we're quite lucky to see a certain level of organization that we at the state fair that we may not have been recognized as Native people. And then we see this sort of the stage lineup this year really points to a certain respect and credence to our Native performers, yourself included, and other folks like Alyssa London and AK Rebel, Nick Hansen, and all these different headliners that are coming onto the stage at the fair. So I'm really glad you're here.
Well, and for me, it was a really wonderful blessing and honor to be asked, because I had been asked previously and just it didn't work out timing wise with my work schedule. But again, I was asked and it was, kind of things thrown up in the air about, what would you like to do during your hour? And I had to put some thought into it and really just, realized how in my career in film and television, I have portrayed Lakota on multiple occasions, Navajo, Mi'kmaq, Algonquin, whether, Pocahontas was Powhatan or in Squanto, I spoke Mi'kmaq, the Mi'kmaq language. And so I've had this chance to go around and portray so many Native women, just always wanted to come home, and so it occurred to me that, I'm an Alaska Native that doesn't know everything about Alaska Natives, just like in the way that I thought in the beginning of my career. I'm just a girl from Alaska. How could I possibly know or even consider, being that these people would be even asking me to speak on behalf of all Native Americans, and I've always just kind of gone with that, and even when I go and do the work that I do at the United Nations, there are 400 million Indigenous people worldwide, and to be able to go to the World Indigenous Forum or to the Global Assembly or to the Climate Summit or any of the other events that I've had the opportunity to go to, I'm always just so impressed and humbled by the amount of ancient human knowledge that there is in this room, and yet at the same time, I want to go home and I want to learn our ways. And yet, you can't even say that word, because our ways are, I'm Inupiaq and Yupik. So I would then go, okay, well then there's my mom's village of Kuyuk. But then I meet so many amazing people and I hear people speaking Inupiaq and Yupik and all these, Tlingit and Haida and Tsimshian, just all these different languages, Chupik. And I just want more. I just want to hear more, and I want to delve into it. And so that's what we decided that I was going to do. And so this last week, I've had the opportunity to speak with some of our prominent Alaska Natives, Alyssa London, Aussie, Sam Johns, and Allison. Allison Warden, who is hilarious and who I just, fell in love with her sense of humor and what she brings. And so just speaking with them beforehand and in conversation like this and finding out, where some of our thought processes intersect as Alaska Natives who live in both worlds, but also who feel the healing soul that Alaska Native people, I think, are coming to. I mean, we're just getting more healed and more whole and more centered every day. Every time I come back to Alaska, I feel it more and more. And so to kind of tailor each one of my little, you know, conversations with the audience to what my, you know, guest is going to be. And so then I get to bring them up and say, you know, start to ask questions like, you know, where did you grow up and what brought you to what, you know, what you do and what are some things that are important to you, whether it's our culture, our relationship to the earth, our language, how we can remain whole as a community, whether that's through sovereignty or building strength within our communities from our through our youth, or uplifting our elders. And so it's been a wonderful week, and I'm really looking forward to Alaska Native Day.
So all of these different things that are kind of intersecting on the stages at the fair, sometimes we haven't seen that at the fair before, or maybe we've seen sort of a lighter version or something like that. And I kind of feel like having you here and kind of help focus that lens on these different events is really helpful to say, well, you know, well, we've made it at the fair, I guess you could say. For me, I personally haven't really gone to the fair and thought Alaska Natives are participated with in the past anyway. But now I see that's changed, where it's like we're part of it, and we're, it sounds like it's a lot more inclusive.
Well, as it should be, you know. I mean, it you have people from around the world that come here in the hopes of seeing this great land and experiencing its beauty and the creatures who live upon it or fly over it or are in the, you know, in the waters below it, and want to have those experiences. But also, I mean, you have so many people who want to come here and experience something of our experience. And so you see that when you walk into our airport, you know, here in Anchorage, you see that, you know, as you go about Anchorage and the surrounding communities, that we have Alaska Native influences, both visually and the visual arts, or, you know, art pieces or buildings have some representation in that way. And I think what's really important also to note is that, you know, we have 288 federally recognized tribes. We are a large part of the population, and I think it only goes to follow that this day and age, yes, that there would be some space for us in the state of Alaska's fair, celebrating the state of Alaska's peoples. So, and peoples and cultures and crafts and all of that. So I think it's timely, and it's doing amazing things. And we're even on Sunday for Alaska Native Day at the fair, on the colony stage. And along with the Native stage there, so the Native stage has a full run up from 11:30, you know, all the way up until closing. 11:30 in the morning starts with Miss Alaska, and then Nick Hansen, and the Eskimo Ninja Warrior, and, you know, the Wheel Blanket Toss, and, you know, the Spirit Dance Production with Steve Alvarez, and traditional dancers just all over the place. And then I guess it culminates with Mark Brown, kind of a blues band at the end of the night. But also have some time on the colony stage, which is the larger stage, one of the larger stages out there. And Miss Alaska and Nick Hansen, Miss Alaska Alyssa London, I should say, Miss Alaska USA, who's Clinkit, and Nick Hansen and Martin Sensmeyer, And a lot of people might know Martin Sensmeyer from, you know, he is a superhero in, you know, on the big screen. So, he's Alaska Native. If I recall right, he's Athabascan. He may also be Athabascan in Gwich'in. I probably should look that up, huh?
Maybe, I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah. But it's going to be a great day out there, and it's a great day of celebrating who we are and what we have to offer in this day and age. And getting, to me, you know, I really just think of myself as a storyteller. So whether that's on stage or on television or film, it's just the same. It's all the same heart to me. You know, I just love telling stories. And I even made a mission and vision statement for myself for the next 20 years. You know, what do I want to do? And I decided that it's healing through the power and art of storytelling. So that's very broad, but it's also just how can we, you know, come back full circle and yet remain in this world. And I think it's really important to, you know, reach out our hands. It even goes to with what happened at Standing Rock. And I'm a special consulate for the Cities of Peace, and we're right now in the process of working on a peace treaty that we are, as soon as I leave here from Alaska, I'm going to be going down and driving all the way to Standing Rock and meeting with the elders there, in protocol and asking permission and asking also for their wisdom on the values that were created or that came to pass from Standing Rock, which was not just about protecting their water resources, but protecting water not just for the people of Standing Rock, but for millions of people, and also protecting Mother Earth, but also protecting Mother, protecting women, rising up of the age of the daughters, where we've had, you know, millennia now, where it is, I would say, masculine or a patriarchal society, the over prevailing society has gone along those lines of the patriarch, the lording over, the paving over, the separation from Earth and our surroundings and our environment. I was reading this book, Nature and the Human Soul by Bill Plotkin, and it's about cultivating wholeness and community in this fragmented world. And it's a little bit of my Bible right now, as far as this thought process. And he really does a compare and contrast of eco society and ego or material society. And I have great faith in humanity and hope for humanity and hope for peace. But I think that Secretary Ban Ki-moon was very wise to put the Global Assembly together, which means that all the, you know, the President of the United States, Prime Ministers, all the first leaders of the countries are asked to be present there, not ambassadors or representatives. So the Global Assembly, you know, asks that of our global leaders. And then he also had the World Indigenous Forum happening simultaneously along with the Climate Summit and the Climate March. And in his wisdom, he put the Indigenous people at the forefront of that Climate March. He asked Indigenous people to speak there alongside President Obama, alongside, you know, the Leonardo DiCaprios of the world, you know, we had indigenous people being given a voice. And I think that's important. We've had so many of our communities have had to literally go underground. The Pueblo people literally dug underground and have managed to keep their knowledge and their traditions, their culture, their language alive. And right above that was, you know, was the church. And they live in both those worlds, but they also have been told over, and, you know, with good reason, you know, death being one of them, told to literally take that knowledge underground. And out of Standing Rock, out of that experience of not just, you know, the Standing Rock community, but then other communities, and then the world indigenous community, and then world, faces, whether they were movie stars or politicians, it brought people from around the world, and that was prophesied. And those people who did manage to get down there felt that. They felt there was something different. There was something that rose up in the hearts of humankind. And I feel like that's what it's not that we're any smarter. It's just that we've had this long endurance to be able to keep our hearts and our spirits and even our bodies intact well enough, even in the face of huge historical traumatic, you know, events and multi-generational, you know, versions of that. We've still managed to keep that heart and that healing. And Secretary Ban Ki-moon sees that our relationship to the earth, knows that we have this ancient knowledge, knows that we can contribute this to also the scientific community. It's not like, oh, we need to go back to the way it was. It's how do we integrate this into our prevailing culture and economies and make this into something that's sustainable for the next seven generations.
It's almost as though we've heard that the world is hurting and that it's time for indigenous healing.
Exactly, yeah. I really do feel that way. I know that the 13 grandmothers have been traveling in their wisdom as well. There were two Maori grandmothers, you know, indigenous Maori people from New Zealand who just came to Ohio. We have this kind of movement from the elders kind of going out and saying, you know, now's the time to open our hearts and extend our hand. And, you know, I mean, let's just say the bridge isn't burned from our end, but it has to be built up from the other end as well. So we're extending our hands, but, you know, it's also this society needs to come and build the other side of the bridge as well. And I think that you could see that process is happening with so many non-Native people who heard the call of Standing Rock and who, you know, went out there and participated and came to understand what non-violent, peaceful, prayerful protection looks like. They did not consider themselves to be protesters. They consider themselves to be protectors. And especially in the face of what's been happening recently and the hate that I think is being cultivated, it's so important right now to cultivate love and to cultivate compassion and humility, but also to take that stand. They took a stand there at Standing Rock. They did not, and it was done with song and prayer, dance, ceremony. People were just standing there holding hands, and in the face of tanks and rubber bullets and freezing cold temperatures with water cannons, people were reacted to with violence, but that violence was brought back and healed to the camps and woke the next morning and went out again with prayers and song and dance and ceremony.
That does sound very powerful.
Yeah.
And, you know, and when you see that kind of thing, I kind of wonder sometimes, do you feel that it's generational as well, and that the sort of millennial generation, or there's a shift in the overall kind of mainstream society where perhaps the message is ready to be heard?
I think so. And, you know, again, down in the, like I said, it's so funny because I feel in so many ways that I've learned so much about our lower 48 brothers and sisters and tribes, you know, and in the portrayals of the various films that I have had a chance to do. And so I've learned so much of the history and so much of the culture and even language. and I just feel like so much has come to pass of what I've heard as I've been down there. You know, one of the things was Spider-Woman, and Spider-Woman the prophecy is that there will be a day when she comes and spreads her web around the world, and humanity will be as one. And when they started calling the internet the World Wide Web, that popped into my head, you know, because now we are all connected, and you have grandmothers who can stay connected in the village with their grandchildren, you know, here in Anchorage or down in the lower 48 or wherever they are in the world. And so that interconnectedness has you know, given us an opportunity to see so many other points of view. The lesson now, today, is to remember that it's not just a blip on the screen. That words are powerful. They invoke something. So choose your words carefully. It's not just a tweet. That tweet has purpose, has meaning, has power, and makes and reverberates, vibrates out there in the sound, in the words in your head, and therefore, in those thought processes, you're changing the chemical in somebody's body. If it's a word of hate, you know, that what does that do to people's heart? What does that do with their heart rate and their blood pressure? And then what does that do to their mind? Now they want to say something back, you know? And so we have to just stop being teenagers about it and really try to remember eloquence and grace and understanding the power of our words. And that when you speak something, you speak it out into the universe, and then therefore it has some vibration of meaning and even to yourself. I mean, you know, it's so easy for anyone, but, you know, for a person, for me to say negative things toward myself, you know, and so I have to remember to, you know, be nice to Irene and say positive things and say, as you know, as the vision, mission, and vision statement, I'm declaring that's a positive of where I want to go, where my future self is in my present invocation. And I think that this generation has to deal with all of that, but also I've heard the stories from down there. When Wovoka did the ghost dance, and at that time saying, it'll be another seven generations, but we're doing this dance today for our ancestors to come forth, and in the next seven generations, you know, white buffalo calf woman will be back on earth, and this new generation, the seventh generation, will be the ones that bring us back to who we are. And I think all humans come from that space. We all come from a relationship to the earth, a relationship to our elders, a relationship, you know, that goes back through those ancestors, and we're all surrounded by them. You know, if we have lost our parents, they are with us. And that, you know, they are here in our present day so that we can be those ancestors for that seventh generation, and we can say we did what we could. And, you know, we've tried the best to make this place a better place to be, not a worse place to be.
And I think we've seen in, like, some, you know, scientific research has kind of bared out that historical trauma does seem to take seven generations or a long time to kind of trickle out into this recovery of a sort.
In historical trauma, also, there are scientific research right now where they are understanding that it does get into your DNA. So it those traumas, those events, those harsh words, they encode themselves into your blood, literally, your genes, literally, and it takes time for that suffering to work its way and heal its way. For instance, so across the street from where I live, I have a neighbor. She just had her 98th birthday, and she walked all the way, little step, all the way across the street to me and invited me to her birthday party. And she's done so before in the past. And so a couple of years ago, we wanted to honor her. She was interned during World War II on the Navajo Reservation. And I don't know if you know this, another scientific fact here, but every blade of grass, every tree, your hair follicles, your body, every animal, every bird, every fish, before the Hiroshima and Nagasaki bomb and after every single living creature now has cesium 138, I believe. I could be wrong on the number, but every single living creature. So this event that was reverberated around the world and that changed us forever, physically changed us forever, but it also connected us. Before and after, humans before and humans after are all interconnected with this one isotope now. And all the creatures upon the earth, all the living creatures. And it'll take generations and generations for that to change, if ever. And so it is in us, that trauma, but it also connects us. And a couple of years ago, we took her up to one of the ancient mounds there in Ohio. And these are the people before the people that we know that were removed in 1868, you know, the people who lived there before them. And they have these ancient mounds and sites all throughout the area, including the Serpent Mound, that are all interconnected and can only be seen from high above. And they are all aligned with the stars. And we took her to the Miamisburg Mound, and across the street from the Miamisburg Mound is the Miamisburg building where the Hiroshima and Nagasaki switches were built.
Wow.
And we took her to this mound and we lit it up and we honored her and we honored her and her people and we asked for healing. And we just watched this mound be lit, well lit with prayers and ceremony around it. And it was beautiful. And I think that is where we are as Indigenous people, that we can offer these spaces of peace and healing. And we can do it with our values intact. Inupiaq values include humility, but they also include humor. So.
So one thing I noticed, just looking at what you've done in the past and your sort of career, and I noticed that you're not only a very eloquent speaker, but I noticed that you're a good listener. Maybe that's two parts of it, but I'm not sure where I'm going with that. It's just sort of an observation.
Well, I think, you know, that's something that has to be cultural, I think, growing up as well. And to always have reverence, and especially for your elders, and reverence for one another in their voice when they have something to say. But it's also something that's important as in the field that I have, which in acting, and I've had acting coaches will tell you, where the acting is not when you have a line; it's in the listening. and how you let that go inside of you and you let that affect you. And then out of the listening, it informs the emotion and the tone of the words that would be your line. So listening is really the most important skill you can have as an actor.
I'm going to remember that.
Yes.
And in a broad sense, you know, as a storyteller, we obviously see that words have great meaning, and then listening as kind of as a people or as a to see these greater issues and kind of help address them. Is that something that kind of falls in line with your mission statement that you and this? Does having a mission statement like that kind of help you see in a long view and maybe not? Sometimes as people, we just end up reacting and like participating in a you know, something that seems so petty right now.
I think so. And I think that when we can teach our young ones to think, to have future thinking, to be future thinking individuals, and to also have that deep and abiding understanding of the past, but to know that, you know, it, as we are all, and now we're in now, and again, now we're in now, and we're in now again, and we're in, and you are the now, and you are a snowflake in a vast field of snow. You're that unique and beautiful, and you're falling from the cloud to the vast field of snow is your time, and all in that time you're, you know, changing and changing form. Crystals are moving around, and I'm making a snow analogy, I know. but when we give ourselves that understanding that, you know, I'm halfway to 100 this year, so that's the way I'm thinking about it. You know, I'm only halfway. I have the amount of time that I've done so far. I have that much time to look forward to, and it gives me that opportunity to kind of look back at up at that cloud from whence I came and look, you know, down to that, you know, field of snow to where I'm going and think about what, you know, what I want to do before I get to that field of snow. And I feel like if we can instill that in our young people, that we will cultivate a generation that can see the bigger picture and not necessarily react to things, but act from the heart and understand that this too shall pass, have patience with one another, know that, you know, this person really is only able to see through their eyes, and hopefully they will give you the courtesy and the presence of mind and the open heart to help, you know, for you to help them to see through your eyes. And if we can cultivate that on a larger scale, it would be so much better.
Wow. So, yeah, there's definitely a lot to think about regarding all these different things and how we're interconnecting and how we can see ourselves as Native people in modern times. And, thank you for sharing what light you've brought to this. Anything else you want to touch on that's coming up?
Well, just, you know, get out to celebrate Alaska Native Day out at the Alaska State Fair this Sunday, September 3rd. And we have a whole bunch of amazing people who are doing wonderful things today out there, and celebrate Alaska Native culture and peoples, celebrate Alaska at the Alaska State Fair, enjoy it with your family. That's, you know, that's so important to me to be able to come here and you know, learn from other Alaska Natives and celebrate with each other. And I just am so blessed to be here, and I'm so blessed to be home in Alaska, and blessed to be continuing the work that I'm doing and in both film and television and on stage and as a storyteller in Koyana.
Thanks so much. Our guest today has been Irene Bedard, star of many films, as well as, well, I've heard that there's an upcoming role in Wreck-It Ralph 2 and various things like that.
Yes. I felt like a beetle or something. There were nine other Disney princesses on stage at the D23, Disney convention, Disney/Marvel convention, Star Wars as well. It was really great. I love Wreck-It Ralph. I love doing animation, and I'm really excited about that coming out next year. And just several of the different projects, whether it's producing or acting, it's always fun to just get a chance to go out and portray different types of individuals and, as I said, see through their eyes and put myself in their shoes.
And so, you know, you mentioned earlier about a couple of different projects that you had on your horizon. Anything else you want to share, kind of sneak peek into the...
Oh. Well, there, right currently, we just had the last episode of The Mist, which is a Stephen King series on Spike Television. So the last episode just aired, but now the whole season's uploaded on Spike TV, so you can sit down and watch if you're in. I have a lot of friends who are like, Irene, how did you do this? You can't even watch scary movies. And, well, you know, it's all about your imagination. But I think this, in a lot of ways, is a morality tale more than it is so much blood and gore. It's more about how we behave with one another in times of distress and disaster and what it takes in order to survive and you know who will do what and as I put it before, you could drop me from a helicopter. I don't have any phobias. I've had snakes wrapped around me. I don't have any kind of that fear. But I would say the closest fear I have is human beings, because you get in a shark tank and you know it's time to get out of that shark tank because there are sharks swimming in there. But I think with human beings, it's difficult often to determine, you know, what motivations might be behind their acts, and so it's really important to have discernment. It's really important to cultivate those skills like humor and reaching out in peace and looking at each other as human beings and not the color of our skin or our race, creed, color, all of that, you know, religion. I think it's important to cultivate a better world so that we have less and less of the fear and more of love and understanding. So I thought it was important to take the role on and do it. And we just finished the last season of Longmire, so that I believe is also all the way uploaded on Netflix. There are a couple of projects in the works as far as producing goes. Wind of Heaven is about a war veteran who comes back suffering from PTSD. The Crow Nation's ability to heal our ways of healing our veterans through ceremony, through soul retrieval, traditional healing, and the wild horses. And so it's kind of a tale that goes across all those lines of storytelling. Along with still working on Touchdown on the Tundra, which is about the story of Barrow and the field, the football field up there, which really in some ways it's the It's the boat that it rides on. This story actually is about two mothers and wanting to cultivate a better world for their son, for our men of the future.
Wow, sounds like everything sounds pretty ambitious, and it sounds like something we can't miss if we are TV watchers or film watchers.
Thank you.
I'd like to thank you for coming on today, and please stay in touch.
Thank you, Koyana. Have a wonderful day.